The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on November 2, 2014. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to see you all. Well, this morning I thought I would talk about our practice of meditation. The reason I was seeking out Dan here, he's part of the Bluestone Zen group in Duluth, and they've been taking a course on meditation that we offer here these past 6 weeks, and every other week on Thursday nights we would Skype, and so we had some interesting discussions there. But then after this last Thursday now, when they finished the course, and we ended our little Skype session, and then I thought of some more things I thought maybe I should have said about our practice of meditation. So anyway, you're gonna get that now. Another thing that kind of triggered this was when I came upon a quote by Katagiri Roshi, those daily quotes that show up on our website. It's just a simple little quote, but there's a lot there, believe me, just a few words. But he said, within conceptual awareness, you must be free of conceptual awareness. Within conceptual awareness, you must be free of conceptual awareness. This is very akin to Dogen when he said, he gave that very enigmatic little phrase, when he said, think not thinking. Think not thinking. Within conceptual awareness, you must be free from conceptual awareness. So what exactly is our practice? This practice of Zazen, practice of meditation. We probably think if it has some association with enlightenment, Dogen uses the phrase practice enlightenment. If it has something to do with enlightenment, well then, and we probably, long before we ever heard of Dogen, would possibly have come to this practice or whatever, or have heard of people practicing like this. Seated meditation. And a very common assumption, there are many assumptions associated with this, but one is that we practice to gain enlightenment. But if we come to a place like this and we study what the masters have said, pretty soon we're reminded, it's pointed out to us, and then we're reminded again constantly that isn't what this practice is. We don't practice meditation to gain enlightenment. Dogen says, practice enlightenment. He says, think not thinking. And how do you think not thinking? Then he says, non-thinking. Katagiri Roshi says, right in the middle of conceptual awareness, you must be free of conceptual awareness. People who think of meditation as maybe a kind of discipline that we do so that we can gain enlightenment, they have ideas that we say, well, the picture is always you're sitting here with your hands kind of like this, maybe, right after your head is thrown back, your eyes are closed, you're in bliss, and we're on our way to enlightenment, we're on our way to bliss, we're on our way to gain something. And maybe we come to a place like this and we take this up and we start to practice with the idea that we're going to gain, if not peace of mind and a settledness of mind and body and spirit, well, maybe we can even gain enlightenment. So we have these kinds of notions and attitudes and understanding. It's very common, very prevalent. Perhaps many of you here have this kind of understanding, which is very normal. I don't blame you one bit if this is your understanding. This is kind of how we understand just about everything. I will do this so that I can get that. And so this is just one more thing. Now we don't quite know exactly what does Dogen mean. He talks about practice enlightenment. What exactly is that? Or think not thinking. Katagiri Roshi points out right in the middle of all of this is conceptual awareness. You must be free from conceptual awareness. We might puzzle over what they're saying because we have this idea that, well, I'm going to practice so that I will get something. If I didn't think I was going to get something from this practice, why would I do it? Why would I do anything? I might do things because they're fun. And maybe it is fun to sit down like this for a little while, a few minutes. But for half an hour, 35 minutes, 40 minutes at a time, and then again, and again, and then day after day, well, that's not exactly fun. So why would I do that? So we see a kind of a separation between living out our life in this moment and something else, something distant, abstract, vague, it's fuzzy, it's out there. Some desire I have, that is, you know, something I want, a different state of mind, something else out there. And somehow it seems like I guess if I just do this and put up with this, drag myself back to it every now and then when I can finally muster up the energy or the will to bring myself back to this thing, which isn't really fun. Maybe I'll get to that. This is a massive confusion here. This kind of thinking. And so I want to say something about this. This kind of thinking, as I said, it matches pretty much everything that we understand about things. You know, I will do this to get that, etc. I will learn this, I will master this, and then I will understand these things. This is how we operate conceptually. And most of our understanding is involved in the conceptual. Ideas and thoughts that we have, structures of thoughts. And we work through these things, well, to gain one thing or another, just to make it through our day. This is very normal for us. What we don't understand about this matter of enlightenment, practice enlightenment, while being just here, is that it is just that. It is just that alone. It's not these other things. What we're chasing about, we're trying to figure out, trying to gain, trying to lose, get rid of, drop off. We're obsessing and worrying and frightened and then driven and ecstatic and sad. This is something different from that. This practice, enlightenment. Right in the midst of all of this, this thinking and running and chasing about, Katagiri Roshi says, you must be free from conceptual awareness. Right in the midst of all this conceptual awareness. Conceptually, yeah, and we have awareness of all the different conceptual constructs that we have flying about, that sort of thing. Even those that we have regarding this practice. Well, what's he speaking of? Well, right in the midst of all of this, we must be free of this. This is to think, you know, this, perhaps this thinking, you know, think, but not thinking. This is what our practice is. It is very difficult for us to realize this. Well, I don't know if it's difficult or not, but it seems to take a long time for people. though there's no reason that it should, because in an instant, you can just be here. Why? Well, because you already are here. It's just a matter of realizing it, waking up to that. Don't lose sight of that. But we think that the meditation is somehow to gain that, to get that, to do something to ourselves in such a way, to train ourselves in such a way that we can get that, I guess. How do you get that? What we don't understand is that this has to do with immediacy, what is occurring right now. And right now, as you're thinking that way, as you're grasping and trying to figure, you don't notice that right now you're very busy. You're puzzled, you're driven, you're worried, you're reaching for something that you don't seem to have, that you don't think you have, that you're apart from. We don't notice that. And then we think, well, then I have to do these things, you see. And then maybe when we take up the meditation, we come to that with all kinds of ideas. That you have to sit here like this with your hands on your knees and your thumbs touching your middle finger or something like this in a ring. And your head maybe thrown back and your eyes are closed. And then you want to go into a trance or something. We think this. I've heard people speak of this. We even had a speaker speak of this here once. That, well, you don't want to be driving a car when you're meditating. You know. Well, yeah, maybe not. If you're in a trance, you don't want to be driving a car. But that isn't an understanding of our meditation. With your eyes closed, all of this. But this practice is just being here, just being present. It isn't shutting anything out. We don't close our eyes. Dzogchen says in Fukan Zazenge, your eyes should always remain open. Of course, if you have to blink, blink. But don't be thinking about whether or not you need to blink. Normally you don't do that, so don't do that now either. But your eyes should remain open. So if you happen to be driving a car, well, in this moment, then you can be driving this car, completely driving this car, with full awareness, and right in the middle of conceptual awareness, where you might have a lot of stuff going on through your mind here, like you can be free of that and be present with the automobile on the road, the turns and the swerves and whatever need to occur, the braking and the accelerating, all of that, completely with that. Or you're in your canoe. I love this. In my canoe. People want to know. They know I go canoeing. And then they want to know, do I go up? Do I bring my zafu? Well, usually I can find a sloped rock or something that I can sit on. That's fine for me. But if I am going to do that. But what about when I'm just out in the canoe? To just really be there. Not with a bunch of surging thought and feeling going on, but being fully present with the beautiful wafting smells from the woods and the sounds and the pines and the birds. Just being there, present, the pull on the paddle as you paddle the canoe. What we don't understand is we can practice this. We can practice this awakening in each moment. Sometimes it is very difficult when we're interacting with others, this sort of thing. There's other things kind of flying at us, or there's times when we need to be caught up in the conceptual awareness, where we need to think clearly and in a logical manner, or whatever, or write things down, or to take care of these things. But we can do this. We can even do this with full awareness. Right in the middle of conceptual awareness, we can be free from conceptual awareness. And what is this exactly, being free from this conceptual awareness? It is just simply not losing sight of just this. And if you want me to say, well, what is just this? What can I say? Just this. What is right here as we sit here? What is just this? You say, well, you're sitting there, Steve, and you know we're all sitting out here, and you know there's this cup over here, and yeah, well, that's conceptual awareness, and we get bound by that conceptual awareness, and we aren't free of it. We're still hanging on to that, and we're seeing formed selves here, and I am here too, and all of this. So everything's broken up, like, and we're completely caught up in that. This is not to be free from conceptual awareness. Right in the middle of conceptual... Kagyur Roshi didn't say to get rid of conceptual awareness. We're right there within conceptual awareness, he says. We must be free from conceptual awareness, where we're not carried away by the apparent substantiality of this and that and the next thing. We don't ignore it because here it is. But we can be free in this. And our practice, this practice of awakening, within the midst of all this, this can be carried out anywhere, at any time. If we think that, well, this is something I do while I sit down, formally I sit down on a cushion and a bell rings, and during this, and then when the bell rings again, I'm done. And, well, this is ordinary kind of thinking. This is conceptual awareness, conceptual construct. And you're not really free from that. You're caught by that. You're thinking that way. And what I want to say, the point I want to make, this is all just a setup for just this one thing. This is what I wanted to impart to the group there in Duluth right after we got off the scope there, Skype. Well, we right in the midst of all of this, what we need to do is to understand that our practice is, this practice is primary. Okay? We come to a place like this, we interact with each other, we practice together with others, we have classes and we discuss things and have talks. Right now you're listening, I'm talking. This is all very, very helpful for us. That's why we have a place where we offer this, where we all come together and allow this to happen. It is all very important, but this is secondary. What is primary is this practice itself of just being here with freedom, right in the middle of all of this thinking and grasping and trying to figure out, trying to get, whatever. All of that stuff that goes on with that. That's not bad and wrong. We need to shut. Nothing, don't misunderstand, no. But right in the middle of that, can we find this freedom? Just in this moment here. What are we talking about? Full awareness. And Kagyur Roshi says, right in the midst of conceptual awareness, we must be free from conceptual awareness. This is awareness. This is just pure awareness, true awareness. This is what awareness is, that allows us to have conceptual awareness. If we don't have some basic understanding of this, that this is primary, just to, what are we talking about again? Just bring yourself back to right here. Right here, right here. Sure, periodically we set up a time where we do this in a kind of a formal way, where the schedule is just really cleared out and we don't do anything else but just sit here. That's very good. But it doesn't end with the bell. This opportunity that we have is always with us to just be in this moment. When we open a door or put on our shoes or whatever it is, we can continue this. Just live out of this. We start to interact with others, now it gets more complicated. More easily we're pulled out of really being present here. But that's okay too. In time, we can do that to some degree without fully losing our presence. in this moment, or realizing what's going on right now within our own heart and mind as we speak and interact. But this is what our practice is. It is just this. And what I want to say about this is, the other stuff, if we make that the primary, that is the study and the thinking and the reading and the listening, which is perhaps necessary to help point out where we're confused, stuff like that. So this is, it's not something to be thrown away. But if we make that primary, meaning that we always dabble with this, we bring ourselves back to this, this is what our practice is that we will sit down to listen to a talk or to attend a class or to read or study or to talk with others and discuss Zen and this sort of thing, go out and have some coffee and we're talking Zen, whatever. What I want to tell you is that there will never be complete understanding in that, ever. The complete understanding is in just being here. This is why we need to come back, and this is why I say this is primary. This is really what it is we need to do, and to not lose sight of, and to understand that well enough, at least, so that we can bring ourselves back to this. I know of no one who has profound understanding of Buddha Dharma who does not practice on a regular basis. No one. I've met many people who are very smart and know a lot of things. A lot of scholars, people I've met. Some practice, some don't. But that practice is vital. That regularity of the practice, and that you do this. The understanding is in that because it is non-conceptual. All the other things that we can do, every other possible thing we can do, involves the conceptual. And to the extent that we keep dabbling in that with the idea that somehow we will reach, what, enlightenment? You are doomed to fail. Well, but not forever, but just as long as you continue to do that or think in that way. You have to come back to this practice. As Dogen says, and this practice is enlightenment. And if we want to realize this, to know this, to see this directly, this is what we have to take up. This is what we need to do. Of course, we take a course on meditation. We offer courses on meditation. We give meditation instruction, all these things. These things are necessary too. But they're not sufficient in themselves. What has to be realized and understood is that we must, if we want to actually finally have that understanding that really quiets the deep need of the heart, with full understanding, with no puzzlement, with no mystery left over, of just what this moment is, it is found in being in this moment. What's to say? Everything else becomes conceptual. But without that directness, there's no understanding. You also need to understand that in a, whatever I say is not quite right, but this isn't something far from you or strange to you. You already know this. You already experience this reality. There's really nothing missing here. But we're distracted. We're caught in the conceptual. We're thinking. We're not doing, as Dogen says, think, not thinking. And this is what we fail to do. So we get hooked. Well, it isn't that we fail to do. We, in a sense, we are doing it. But we're caught in the thinking, in the grasping. We want to understand something from this practice. That's why I practice. I will practice so I will gain some understanding. What we don't understand is that you already have this understanding. So that approach doesn't work, and that approach keeps you locked in the conceptual. So just trust this, just to come back. If thinking is occurring, that's fine. Don't worry about it. Don't try to drive it out. It can quiet down by itself, and it can come and go. You can discover that. But just bring yourself back to this. But when we finally wake up to what this really is in this moment, which isn't really anything in particular, but it is just this, that's what practice is. That's what this zazen is. It doesn't have to be sitting on a cushion, etc. You could be driving the car or paddling a canoe, taking off your shoes. But this is what we need to understand. Otherwise, we will spend too much time dabbling with the thinking and the reading and the talking. Again, it isn't that that's wrong or bad. It's necessary to some degree. But just understand that you will never find the resolution you're looking for in that activity. You just won't. Something else needs to be done. What is that again? Just learn to bring yourself back. Again and again. In each moment. Helpful, of course, formally to do this with others in a formal way where we deliberately minimize our activity as we do in daily practice here. Yeah. But it's not limited to just that. Doesn't mean you can, well, you can, you're totally free, but this isn't to say that the rest of the day you can just be scattered and duped and chasing about and running from. You can, of course. But even there, you can learn to bring yourself back to just this. Just observe what you're doing. What's going on? Learn to do this without judgment. Just seeing it for what it is. The awakening will be in that. Not in something you're deliberately thinking through and grasping and trying to get a grip on. Okay, well, I don't know. Maybe I said more than enough. I don't know. Any questions about any of this or arguments? Yeah.
In your first book, you draw a distinction between conception and perception.
Yeah.
So, Ken, are you talking about perceiving and conception, basically?
Yeah, well, right in the middle of conception, we need to be free from that. Okay. And freedom from this is, well, where are we? Well, we're always in the midst of perception. This is just a given. Yeah. But even though that's always operating, we don't notice it because we're caught in the conception. So that's the distinction there. And the conceptual always involves things and, you know, feelings, thoughts, individuated stuff, phenomena, you know. Stuff that we can identify. Not just necessarily physical objects and things like that, but even things like a headache or, you know, some thought or feeling we might have. Love. Of course, and there's all kinds of love. And then, you know, there's things we question. Well, is this love or is that, you know? And there we go. But always parsing things out, attaching labels to things, and drawing these distinctions. That's all the result of, the drawing of the distinctions, so to speak, is that's consciousness. That's what it is. It's just divisions are being made. And the stuff that's being parsed out, that's the conceptual. And it's not just necessarily physical or thoughts. It could also be, you know, feelings. But of course, as soon as we identify that, there's a thought associated with that now. So most of us, to the extent that we, you know, are talking about our feelings, this sort of thing, what we don't understand is, okay, but you're involved now as much in the thinking of this as you are with the feeling. In fact, the feeling has probably become somewhat remote now because you're discussing it. Instead of just actually completely feeling what is occurring in this moment. and letting it just flow through. We'll grasp it, we'll hang on to it, we want to play with it, we want to, you know, build it up or whatever, and not realizing what we're doing. And our sense of self is being solidified there and growing and becoming stronger. And we don't realize that this is to be caught, this is an imprisonment, this is torture and confusion. We don't even realize that. We sometimes enjoy this, we want to play with it. We form our identities out of these sorts of things. And I'm not saying we get rid of it. You can't get rid of this stuff. But you don't need to be caught by it. And most of the time we're not paying any attention to it. And we don't even realize how here I am formed as some kind of abstraction here, but seems real to me, and I'm being tossed all around by all of this. We don't even notice that. And we're wondering, why do I feel dissatisfaction here? Why do I feel pain, suffering, and confusion? We don't even have a clue. And here we are. Coming back to this moment is just to notice. At first, it might be, oh, wow, you know, it's like the first time we do a sesshin or something. It's like, oh, man, you know. But bring yourself back. Eventually, that starts to quiet down some. At some point, when it's settled enough, you can start to see it for what it is. But this is always occurring in the perceptual. That's always on. It's the full everything that is going on. Anything else? Yes, Jill.
The concept of the golden fish. So how does that interrelate to what you're talking about?
Yeah, well, that's the golden fish. Yeah, you know the golden fish? The golden fish is that thing that you most deeply want and need. This is the great need of the heart. This is the golden fish. And usually we go searching for it. You know, we get some idea, we form some idea, we think we know. Maybe we're not really sure, but we have some sense of what it is that I need and want. You know, that's the conceptual. And then we go chasing after that. And it always eludes us in one way or another, even if you happen to catch that thing, which would be rare, because usually it's not even just one thing. It's, you grab hold of it, it seems like a whole bunch of cloud of stuff just burst out of that thing. And, you know, but that's how things are. You can't really get hold of anything like that. But even if it seems like you do get hold of that thing that you so strongly desired, within no time at all, you know, you're not even paying attention to that. You're obsessed with one thing or another that you're chasing after or running from. But the golden fish would be the thing that we want to get. You know the way to realize the golden fish, right? We just make ourselves ready. Well, what is that? Just sit down. Just sit down right here. The golden fish, that thing that you truly want, comes swimming up of its own. You can't chase after it. If you chase after it, all you're doing is you've formed just some abstraction in your mind, and it's out there removed from you, separate from you, and so there you are. And as long as you see it that way, there's your confusion, and that's how you're going to be caught. And that can be endless until you wake up to realize, just settle down in this moment, and the golden fish, the deep need of the heart, will be answered all of its own. It comes up to you. Well, there's enlightenment. You know, you can't go chasing after that. Just sit down here. You will realize that you're already in it, for lack of a better word. It's not a matter of in or whatever. It's just, it's always been thus. But we don't notice this because we're chasing after something that we've got some idea about. And we don't even notice that. We never get that thing, or if I do, it doesn't matter because I'm over here. We don't even notice this. We think that this is how it has to be. Well, it doesn't have to be like this. It's only this way because you're confused and you're not noticing what's going on. So we just stop that, and the golden fish comes up. What it really is, of course, we've never been apart from the golden fish. So I don't know, does that help you there, Joe?
Yeah, I think about it as the golden fish is in your pond, but you're creating the turbulence. The golden fish can't swim to you because you're confused.
Yeah. That'd be another way of looking at it. Yeah. As long as we're careful with these images, you know, just to kind of convey, you know, what we're dealing with. But it's something like that. Lonzo de Vasto, I think this is a quote that maybe comes up on our computer once in a while, on our website. You know who Lonzo de Vasto is? A very interesting man. He was kind of a playboy, born to wealth and riches and this sort of thing. And he's Italian and, just drove fast cars and had plenty of women, this sort of thing. Just living a hedonist's life, you know. And at some point, while he was still a fairly young man, he started to realize, you know, this is just empty. He just, something was lacking, something missing here. And he ended up going to India. This is back at a time when Gandhi was active there in India at that time. It was probably back in the 30s, I suppose. Anyway, he went to India. This guy's never known hardship or pain or difficulty in his life. Well, we've all known some pain, whatever. But anyway, he goes to India, and the very first day he's there, he's robbed, he's beaten, you know, he's kind of left for dead or whatever, you know, with maybe nothing more than a shirt on his back. He doesn't even have his passport, he doesn't have any money, he doesn't have any identification, nothing. There he is in India. Complete turnaround of fortune from what he had was born to and had only known. Well, he writes about this, a very interesting book, which I can't remember the title now. But anyway, he then started roaming around India, and eventually he met up with Gandhi and became a kind of a disciple of Gandhi. And very interesting man. But he said, now here's a guy who really knew pleasure. It came to him easily. You know, he was also a very handsome man. He was just, you know, a very intelligent man. He just had everything going for him. Okay, and then loses so much of that, and then he meets Gandhi. And a guy who had always pursued pleasure easily found for him. And he says, pleasure of herself, I think he uses the feminine pronoun there, I think, but pleasure of itself teaches us that she is not what we must seek. For the moment we go chasing after her, she flees. So this is what he knew, because he had all of this. He had the cars, the women, the money, the whatever, all of that, the good looks, all of this. And so he'd be pursuing pleasure, but he started to realize that he wasn't really tasting this, experiencing this. It was something profound and deep that was lacking in his life. He pursued pleasure. So he was speaking from someone who really knew this, who really experienced it. Fortunately, he also had the presence of mind and the settledness of mind to reflect on this and to realize, you know, just how destitute he was in the midst of all of this that seemed to be plentiful. I have another story of a fellow who had the same kind of life, but he ended up committing suicide because he said he was just, the suicide note said he was just tired of the whole damn thing. I heard that on the news years ago. Walter Cronkite was the anchor at that time, and he spoke of this man who you would know if I gave his name, but maybe I won't. But here's Lonzo de Vasto. He reflected on this, and he realized that if I pursue pleasure, she only flees. He said, but if you stop and just turn from that, he said, she will come up to you and overtake you with, what does it say? It's just some strong, you know, it would just take hold of you like this. If you don't pursue it, if you don't chase after that. What he's talking about, just stop, just bring yourself back into this moment. And the great reward that he could not find, the great fulfillment in his life that he could not find, the fullness in his life, the realization that his life was the life of the world, including all of the suffering. He identified this as pleasure, but maybe pleasure isn't even really the right word at this point. But just a complete realization and fulfillment of living your life as the life of the whole world that is yours. We can realize that. But you cannot realize that if you keep chasing. Because whatever it is you're chasing after, that's one of the particular things. See? They're all separate and broken. That's the conceptual. It's all broken out. We can name these things and chase after them, and they seem to be over there. Just stop that. Bring yourself back. And it's in this moment, and the awakening will be right here in this moment. This is where you're going to find it. So that's why I say this is imperative. You have to, this, you must do this. This is primary. The rest is all secondary. Or tertiary here. How far down can we go with this? I don't know. But the secondary stuff would be, yeah, to study, to bring yourselves back to, you know, and have things like this pointed out for us. Yeah, we need to do some of that too. But that by itself is not this moment of waking up. For that, we just need to be here. So we should really understand this and make some effort to return to just this. And never mind how busy your mind is. That'll take care of itself in time. Just learn to do this. And do it repeatedly. On a regular basis. The freedom is there for you to wake up to it. So, well, thanks, Jill. Did you have anything else? Sorry. Yeah. Anything else? Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.